The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 30, Text 46, given by Srila Runasrup Das on April 24th, 1992, in Catonsville, Maryland.
Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So a reading on Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 30. The Activities of the Prachetas, this morning's text number 46. All the trees on the surface of the earth were being turned to ashes. Lord Brahma immediately came to the sons of King Bahishman and pacified them with words of logic. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Whenever there is some uncommon occurrence on any planet, Lord Brahma, being in charge of the whole universe, immediately comes to control the situation. Lord Brahma also came when Hiranyakashipu underwent severe penances and austerities and made the whole universe tremble. A responsible man in any establishment is always alert to keep peace and harmony within the establishment. Similarly, Lord Brahma is also allowed to keep peace and harmony within this universe. He consequently pacified the sons of King Bahishman with good logic. After seeing that all the trees in the surface of the earth were being turned to ashes, Lord Brahma immediately came to the sons of King Bahishman and pacified them with words of logic. So there was a period in the earth where there was no king or no ruler. Bahishman Pachini Barishat, their father, had left. The sons were under the ocean meditating. So during that time, the normal activities of civilization had fallen into disarray. So this means, when the trees are all over, it means lands were not being cleared, crops were not being cultivated. Because that will happen. If you just stop everything, you'll see, like if you see even today, like an abandoned shopping center, it's not too long, even though there's asphalt, within a few years, trees will be coming up through the pavement, and everything will go back to forest or jungle very quickly. So whenever there's civilization, land is cleared and planted and cultivation goes on, and the jungle is kept at bay. So when they came out, they saw that the forest had taken over the planet completely and grown very, very big. It's just like as though they were going to block the way to the heavenly planets. And so they saw this as a sign of neglect. And so from their mouths, big fire shot out. And here it says they reduced the forest to ashes. So therefore, when this happened, seeing this happen, this was excess, overreaction. And then, just like today, people are protesting that too much jungle is disappearing. And now everyone's marching to save the jungle. They don't call it jungle anymore. That has a bad connotation. Now they call it rainforest. And save the they're talking about jungle. Save the rainforest, save the jungle. So here, similarly, early instance of saving the wildlife, first progenitor of the Sierra Club and other environmental movements for the excesses of the government is the Pitamaha, the grandfather, Lord Brahma. He comes on the spot and pacifies them, he says, with nyaya, with words of logic. He uses logic and reason and tells them to control their anger and that they're going too far and their destruction of the forest. They have their, the forest has also their protector. And they have also, the forest has its rights. So that's why their rights are being recognized. So anyway, if you need some early reference to the environmental movement, here it is. Lord Brahma himself. So he's the senior person, Adi Deva. He's called also Adi Deva, first created being, Veda Garbha, impregnated with the Vedas. This idea of creation, of a creator, is also found in Western philosophy. This is also Plato's story in Timaeus, how creation takes place, that there is a first being appears, Demiurg, Demiurgos in Greek, it's called Demiurg, a god. And in Plato's account, matter is already there in some primordial unformed state. And then this first Demiurgos gives form and shape to this matter by seeing a vision of the eternal forms of things that already existing, as in Plato's philosophy, were the ideas, or the, you might say, the blueprints of all living beings. He called them Eidon, which is translated as form or ideas. And the equivalent of that in Vedic thinking is the Vedas. The Vedas contain all the instructions for creating everything in the material world, all the blueprints, all the data, all the information. And Lord Brahma becomes inspired or impregnated with the Vedas, and then he knows how to create the universe. So he's here called Pitam, and then he populates the universe. So here he also remains as a kind of overseer of the whole creation, a senior person. He mentions here that whenever there's a big disturbance, it's so big that the lower level of management, the devatas headed by Indra, cannot contain that disturbance. There's such a disturbance of the cosmic order, they go to Lord Brahma. So he's the higher level. Because there's two levels of higher planetary systems. One is Svargaloka, and on that level, Indra is king. Indra means king, and he's leads all the devatas. But above that, there are other planets, Mahaloka, Tapaloka, Gyanaloka, Satyaloka, where the sages are dwelling. And at the top of that, topmost there is Lord Brahma. So he comes. So he says he has this responsibility. So there's another place where Prabhupada talks about the responsibility of Lord Brahma and what he is supposed to do. This verse we find in the second canto, chapter 9, where Lord Brahma, at the beginning of the creation, has performed penances and austerities. He finds himself kind of waking up, sitting on a lotus flower, and he looks around and he can't see anything in any direction. Here he is. Who is he? What am I doing here? What's supposed to happen? All around is empty space. All he sees is the stem of the lotus flower disappearing into darkness. So he wants to find out, that's his only clue to what his origin is, to go down that lotus stem, which he tries to do but can't get very far. And then he hears from coming nearby these two sounds, ta-pa, ta-pa, and which means penance. And so taking this as divine instruction, He sits on his lotus seat, and for 1,000 years, not our years, David years, 1,000 years of the Devatas, he performs austerity and penance. And then at the end of that, he is able to see the spiritual world. In this account, this time, here in Bhagavatam, he sees Vaikuntha and meets Lord Narayan, a Vishnu, four-handed Vishnu form. So when he meets him, he becomes overwhelmed with ecstasy. Then it says here that what happens next is seeing Brahma present before him, the Lord accepted him as worthy to create living beings, to be controlled as he, that is the Lord, desired. And thus being very much satisfied with him, the Lord shook hands with Brahma and slightly smiling addressed him thus. And this is when he gives Brahma this Bhagavatam, Chaturshloki Bhagavatam, enlightens him with Srimad Bhagavatam, compacted into four verses, into four shlokas. So here it says, Kare Sprishan, which Prabhupada translates as shook his hand, took him by the hand, held his hand. So here, Prabhupada, I want to read Prabhupada's purport here. He says, the creation of the material world is not blind or accidental. The living entities who are ever conditioned or nitya buddha are thus given a chance for liberation under the guidance of his own representative like Brahma. So here's the purpose of creation, Prabhupada said. It's there for a purpose. What is? To give the conditioned souls a chance for liberation. That's the whole business. This material world is here, this whole incredible thing that has to happen for making this material world, just to give the conditioned souls a chance for liberation. How? Under the guidance of his own representative like Brahma. The Lord instructs Brahma in Vedic knowledge. In order to diffuse this knowledge to the conditioned souls. So not just Vedic knowledge so he can cobble together the universe, put the planets and the demigods and make the Prajapatis and all that stuff, but more. So he can also help bring the living entities to their spiritual consciousness. In order to diffuse this knowledge to the conditioned soul. So he's giving, making Brahma his Veda Garbha, but that has to go on. Brahma is not just supposed to keep it for himself. He's supposed to pass it on. The conditioned souls are forgetful souls in their relationship with the Lord. And thus a period of creation and process of dissemination of Vedic knowledge are necessary activities of the Lord. So it's part of the same. The universe is created and then Vedic knowledge has to go out. That's why Lord Brahma has a book in his hand. He is not only the creator, he's the first Brahmana. He knows Brahman. Lord Brahma has a great responsibility in delivering the conditioned souls, and therefore he is very, very dear to the Lord. So that's also is part of his business. And overseeing the creation, Prabhupada is saying, is he has to deliver the conditioned souls. Brahma also does his duty very perfectly, not only by generating the living entities, but also by spreading his party for reclaiming the fallen souls. This party is called the Brahma Sampradaya. And any member of this party to date is naturally engaged in reclaiming the fallen souls back to Godhead, back home. The Lord is very much anxious to get back his parts and parcels as stated in Bhagavad Gita. No one is more dear than the one who takes the task of reclaiming the fallen souls back to Godhead. There are many renegades from the Brahma Sampradaya whose only business is to make men more forgetful of the Lord and thus entangle them more and more in material existence. Such persons are never dear to the Lord, and the Lord sends them deeper into the darkest region of matter so that such envious demons may not be able to know the Supreme Lord. Anyone, however, preaching the mission of the Lord in the line of the Brahma Sampradaya is always dear to the Lord, and the Lord, being satisfied with such a preacher of the authorized bhakti cult, shakes hand with him in great satisfaction. So not only Lord Brahma, but anyone who follows Lord Brahma's mission has this relationship with Krishna. The Lord is so pleased with him, as he says in Bhagavad Gita, he's the most dear, that he shakes hands with him in great satisfaction. He feels very grateful because he is more pleased by that than any other activity. So here we are actually supposed to be carrying out, as he says here, we're members of Lord Brahma's party. This is also Lord Brahma's mission, as much as he comes to save the forest sometimes or to help rescue the world from demoniac kings and all those other things. So here he also comes. He's spreading this party, Brahma Sampradaya. And that's our Sampradaya. That's why we should study very carefully this, how Lord Brahma became Krishna conscious. Because we're supposed, this is our model. This is our model. And Prabhupada says that just like we're a party for book distribution, that's what the Lord Brahma has the book. Prabhupada said this Brahma Sampradaya is known as the Sampradaya of the book. They're like the Sri Sampradaya. They are coming from the goddess of fortune, so they're rich. They have big, rich temples. So Brahma Sampradaya, they have books. They're putting out books. And you see, you know, Madhvacharya, Jayatirtha, all the very, very big writers and philosophers, they put out so many books. And then coming down, Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti, Baladeva Vijayabhushana, all these are putting out so many literatures are there. Srila Prabhupada giving all these books. Now you see also so many Prabhupada's disciples, grand disciples, they're writing books. Everybody is writing so many books. This is our business, the Sampradaya of the book. Some of us have to manage. we can't write. But what is the business of all this? To bring back the fallen soul. This is his party. This is Brahma's mission. So our mission is actually, we are being directed in this mission ultimately by the creator of the universe, the engineer who made the thing. What's the use for Brahma to make this whole universe just to have it taken over by a bunch of demons who want to hijack it and use it for their own purposes? No good. So his mission is this Brahma Sampradaya has to go on. And Lord Chaitanya himself took his initiation in this Brahma Sampradaya. And Lord Brahma himself was already there on the planet as Thakur Haridas, just to show about the chanting of the holy name and the importance of it. So Brahma is very much interested in this mission, that he also came down as the Namacharya the chanting of the holy name. In this way, he was also able to participate in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So our business is to continue this mission. This mission is the only way that will save us and also save everybody else. And Krishna, be pleased. Here Prabhupada says, right here, definitely, the Lord becomes satisfied with such a preacher of the authorized bhakti cult. He shakes hands with him in great satisfaction. So that is what Krishna wants, that we should give Krishna consciousness to others. We take it ourselves and we give others the opportunity for gaining Krishna consciousness. We'll also, that's the best thing for us also. We want, because if we want to preach Krishna consciousness, then Krishna, he says, oh, you want to preach Krishna consciousness, then Krishna will give us Krishna consciousness so we can preach it. That way we force him to give us his mercy. Because we are having desire to preach, so he'll say, well, how can you preach? You don't know anything. I'll have to give you spiritual knowledge. So he's very merciful and kind to those who want to preach Krishna consciousness. And that mission will change everything in the whole universe. Here Prabhupada says something very interesting. There are many renegades from the Brahma Sampradaya. Renegade means like a traitor. Somebody who was originally part of the Brahma Sampradaya, but then went away and became an enemy. He doesn't say who's referring to, but they were originally part of this party. But then they go away. What is their business? To make people more forgetful of the Lord. And entangle them more and more in material existence. So people have that purpose. You see everywhere. If you want to become forgetful of Krishna and want to become more entangled in material existence, there is expert guidance for this. Very, very expert guidance. How to go into Maya, how to forget Krishna, how to prove that God is no God or God is impersonal, and that is, and so on. So these renegades are also there and doing their business. Their business is also going on. There's always this struggle that we see everywhere. Two sides are there in the universe. One group wants to serve the purposes of the Lord. He brings this material creation here to reclaim fallen souls. And there's another group that sees this creation and says, wait a minute, we can do it, use it for something else. You know, we take it over and we run it ourselves, we can make it better. We can do a better job. And if we just get control over material nature, by our expertise, we'll be able to live a long time, maybe forever, and we won't have to bow down to anybody. Because anyway, people come to the material world, they're infected with malice. Everyone in the material world has malice. And Prabhupada says, actually, it's earlier in this chapter. He said, malice begins at the top. Malice is directed toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So people are here competing for becoming the Supreme, for lording it over material nature. With malice toward all creatures, everyone, to become superior, to subjugate them, to exploit them for their sense gratification. Well, this malice begins with Krishna. So, it is Brahma, who is free from this malice. Devotees, they have no malice. They say, yes, you, Krishna, you are the Supreme Personality of God, and I have no objections. You be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I'll be your servant. That's your position, and this is my position. But if one sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead and say, oh, look at that gem on your chest. I want that too. Then there's some malice. I want that too. I want to be big like you. I want to rule over. Why should you have all the gopis or all the lakshmis? Why can't I have some? Isn't that greedy? So people are envious of Krishna. They don't like to know. One thing that actually showed me what Prabhupada meant, because people are worship, they say they are worshiping God, but actually in their heart there's malice. And I could see this when one time Prabhupada was meeting with an Indian man, and he was a Christian, you know, from Kerala, someplace like that. So he had been converted to Christianity. So the Christian missionaries in India, they make their converts by blaspheming Krishna. So this Indian man said to Prabhupada, how can you worship a god who is an adulterer? So then Prabhupada said to him immediately, looking right at him, and something that exposed, you know, the malice in this man, Prabhupada said, Krishna is not an adulterer. You are the adulterer. All women belong to Krishna. That's what he said. So here's some man who's going on and thinking of, this is my wife, she belongs to me. And he says, all women belong to Krishna. Not one for you. Everyone for Krishna. So some materialistic man, he hears that, he thinks, oh, that's horrible. Because he's thinking, I'm going to enjoy. He wants to enjoy the material energy. That enjoyable feature of the material energy is there for a man in the form of a woman. I am the enjoyer. You tell these karmis, no matter they go to church, all women belong to Krishna, there'll be a revolution against God. In fact, that's what's going on, is a revolution against God. The whole material world, they're trying to make some revolution. Of course, they're losing all the time because it's not possible. It's not possible. So the malice is there in the heart. And devotees, they have to become free from this malice. Krishna, all the women belong to you. I'm your servant. That's what it means. You are the enjoyer. Not me. You are the enjoyer. I'm not in the enjoying business. My business is to help you enjoy. That's freedom from malice. And that's what it means when Arjuna says to Krishna, you are the supreme Brahman. When one is free from malice like this toward Krishna, then he can understand who Krishna is. Till then we won't really understand. This is why it says that this Srimad Bhagavatam is actually meant for Paramahamsas. The heart, there's no dirty, not a dirty thing is in there. They have no pure in heart. They're all competitive feelings in any phase are gone. Competitive feelings are two kinds. Let me lord it over the material energy, or let me become God by merging with the Supreme. These are two phases of malice toward Krishna, two projects for becoming the Supreme. So we have to give those up. That way we can be a full member of Lord Brahma's party. in this way carry on the business of Krishna. We become pure ourselves, and then we can help purify others also. So any questions? Comments on this? Yeah?
I'm trying to understand more about Lord Brahma, because when you speak of him here, you know, it's like you're speaking of the original Brahma, but I mean, it just sounds like to me, but then I also heard that each individual ends up being Brahma, so I don't understand.
No, this is about, Lord Brahma is a jiva, in most cases, the Shaktivesh avatar, jiva. And so, every time there's a creation of the universe, a new jiva takes that position of Lord Brahma. They're not always like the Brahma this time, this creation. So there's so many universes that are created. So when it is said that when a living entity, his first birth in the material world, he's given this opportunity. Prabhupada says that somewhere. The opportunity that living entity wants to be God. So here you can have your own universe, and you lord it over. And then from there he goes down. So that's obviously not what's happening here. So this is, but it's not that there's an original Lord Brahma. There are many, 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 many Lord Brahmas. There's one separate Lord Brahma for every universe, and the universes are coming and going and coming and going, so there are lots of them. So this is the Brahma for this universe, this time. And these are the pastimes. The Brahma is there when Krishna comes. Forms his pastimes. That's my understanding. So not all Brahmas at all times are that Krishna conscious. That's what I can understand. Okay? Anything else? Any other? Question? Comment? Yeah?
A couple of verses back. Prabhupada was saying in one purport that it's not a fact that jungles and trees attract clouds and rain, because we find rainfall over the sea. So it sounded like he was arguing against someone who might have been making a case for why the forest shouldn't be cut down.
Yeah.
And we thought that might be kind of a controversial statement today, because it seems like what the environmentalists are doing now does seem to be a beneficial thing, and it seems that Prabhupada was contradicting that.
Yeah. Well, Prabhupada was not so fond of just jungle. In Philadelphia, everyone's very proud. You know, there's this Fairmont Park in Philadelphia. It's 8,000 acres of land. And a big chunk of it is just woods, landscape woods, up Wissahickon Gorge and things like that. So we're all very proud of it, all the devotees. Everybody likes to go hiking and walking and all this stuff, and bicycling through this. Right in the middle of the city, there's this gigantic forest. So when Prabhupada came in 75 to Philadelphia, we took him on his morning walk to Fairmont Park. You know, so all these devotees are going through this, you know, dense forest. Prabhupada said, "What is this jungle doing in the middle of the city?" He said, "It should be cut down and crops should be planted." Just at that time, there was all this outcry that there was, shortage of food. So Prabhupada was constantly preaching that there's plenty of land, there's plenty of food, land is not being utilized properly. So he said, you know, what is the use of having in the middle of the city this acreage? He didn't say it should be cemented over with parking lots, but it should be turned into agricultural fields. So that's what That's generally what you want to see. I don't think that's necessarily in conflict with any environmentalist thing, because, like, for example, the rainforest in Brazil and those places is actually, that land is very, very poor. It's not suitable for agriculture at all. I mean, why there's big stands of jungle everywhere is you can't farm on it. What happens with it is it's used for grazing beef cattle, for shipping to America, McDonald's. So they're cutting it down, but the soil is so poor, once it's denuded, it's only good for a few years as pasture, and then it's finished. You can't do anything with it, and it becomes absolutely wasteland. That's really what's happening. It's more the meat industry, but it's just not suitable for any kind of farming, except what's done there by native people. They manage to plant little plots and go around because the soil is very poor. And that's the most suitable way. So there'll always be some forest. This is like if you fly over Pennsylvania, you see where there's still forest. It's all on the trees, the mountains. And where there's forest, it means nobody could grow anything there. And trees are also beneficial. So many things come from trees. You know, India, everyone's all excited about the neem tree again. Somebody thinks it'll make a good contraceptive now. They discovered so many medicinal properties otherwise the neem tree. And so, of course, Prabhupada always said that these useful trees should be growing. And so one is not trees are, everybody, banyan trees, and they give shelter to so many living entities, and they produce so much, and jackfruits, and all these things, they're flowers. Prabhupada always thought that there should be fruits, flowers, trees. Well, he did one part of Fairmount Park he liked, when there were nice trees, and it was landscaped, and, you know, it wasn't just jungle with no purpose. So anyway, that was his attitude there. You know, the idea that we should just let the old world become overrun with trees and, you know, walk around like aborigines and try to live off beetles and grubs is also not civilization. Yeah.
Also, it's considered pious activity planting trees.
Yeah, that's right. You can see why it's pious. You have to wait sometimes 30 years for the results. Somebody else gets it, really. You know? It's actually a very nice thing to do, to plant trees, because you really benefit future generations so much.
Vanaspati is also coming from the jungle. Vanaspati, yes. And,
what comes from jungle?
Vanaspati. Ayurvedic, all
medicines. Oh, medicines, yeah. That's one, yeah, everything. That's why one reason modern people want, they say there's so many plants in the jungles we haven't seen yet, we don't even know what's there. And that's a fact. Prabhupada also said that for every disease, there's already a cure in nature, you just have to find it. And now they're discovering, you know, these aborigine people, they know all this stuff. They know this plant, this plant, this plant. But not only the jungles are growing, but the aborigines are all becoming, you know, Episcopalians or Presbyterians or something, and nobody's learning anymore all the medicine that they know. So nobody would be opposed to all that, you know. But there are lots of other people who just, you know, don't want to have any crops, any civilization. That's another thing. Yeah.
Would it be offensive to plant
a
tree here?
A what?
Would it be offensive to, like,
root
a tree seed and plant it here?
Offensive? No. It won't grow here. It requires hotter climate. You have to plant it in Florida, and it'll grow in Florida, Southern California, from.
Now, Vrindavan also,
In Vrindavan, in the Goshala, there are seedlings for 100,000 trees. They had to go all over to get the seeds, like to get the right tamal tree seed. They had to go up to the Himalayas, actually. And they have 100,000 trees. And this summer they'll be, you know, this big. And they'll put them out along the Parikrama path. They're hoping to have different people assigned to take care of different trees, because they don't last long in India, these little trees. You know, the goats come, the cows come, everybody eats, tears up, and you have to really protect them. And they're hoping that 50% will survive and grow, because, you know, that because people are so poor and everything, they go and they take firewood and...
ISKCON's responsible for those trees?
Yeah. The funding is coming, a big chunk of the funding is coming from the World Wildlife Fund. That's helping like that. Also, ISKCON, what time do we have to stop?
5 minutes.
5 minutes. Also, we are buying, there's a place right behind, you know, the Parikrama path goes near the temple. And so right back a little bit past the temple, there's this big empty field. It's very sandy. Everybody calls it Raman Reti. And there's that tree, that white and black tree together, that Krishna Balaram tree. So right behind that, there's a wall, and there's like a forest. There's still lots of tamal trees and everything. So that person, Abhiram Prabhu, was there last year, and he discovered that the man that owned that, a Goswami, had divided it into 9 lots and was selling it for people to build houses. So that meant, you know, the trees would go and houses would come up. So actually he had already had 3 people ready to buy 3 lots. So Abhiram talked him out of selling it and said, we'd buy the whole thing. I think it's expensive, huh, what we're paying. I can't remember now. Maybe $150,000 or something. You know, very expensive. And so he gave him a deposit to hold it. So part of the thing we're trying to do with ISKCON Foundation is to raise the funds in America to get that and turn it into a park. We'll call it Bhaktivedanta Swami Memorial Park, because it's right on the Parikrama path, so we make it a nice park and put some benches and good drinking water, and all the pilgrims will stop there. And that way we want to keep that from going too. So everybody in Vrindavan is very bad. I think everybody thinks it's transcendental, so it doesn't matter what you do or something. I don't know. So it's very good to plant trees, actually.
But it did something about so much.
Yeah.
Murders and robbers and anything.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so Prabhupada wasn't into seeing all the jungles and forests disappear, but clearly there has to be some agriculture going on, otherwise you won't have civilization. Agriculture, pasture. Agriculture and pasture are there because people clear forests. On this planet anyway, if you don't do that, you know, it'll all be, you know, vana. And vana means like forest, but it also means meadows, you know, anywhere that there's not cleared. You know, we always say vanamali is like a vanamala's forest flowers, but it could be, you know, it's wildflowers from meadows or anything like that. So depending on the climate, but mostly it'll be trees. Only when it's very high up are there no trees, or where it's very, you know, like the Midwest, United States. You know, it's just fields, but there are no trees grow there because of not sufficient water. Like you go out, you know, in Oklahoma, things like that, if there's nobody there, there'll be long grass. And just where there's a stream, then there'll be trees on the bank of the stream, cottonwoods and things like that. It's too dry. And if there's moisture, then everything will be covered by trees. Like here, it'll be solid trees. Pennsylvania be solid, nothing but trees like this. Anything else? Thank you very much, Glory to the Prabhupada.